Welcome, friends. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. It's the 3rd of April, 2013, and today I'm joined on the line by Kevin Carson, a researcher and author at the Center for Stateless Society at c4ss.org. Kevin is a senior fellow at the Center for Stateless Society, and he holds the center's Carl Hess Chair in Social Theory. He's a mutualist and individualist anarchist whose written work includes studies in mutualist political economy, organization theory, a libertarian perspective, and the Homebrew Industrial Revolution, a overhead manifesto. And he is, of course, his writings are available at the Center for Stateless Society, once again, c4ss.org, and also on his own mutualist blog at mutualist.blogspot.com. And as always, I'll put the links into all of that in the show notes for this interview. So, Kevin, thank you very much for your time today.
Well, thanks for having me.
Well, before we get into the interview proper, why don't we just talk a little bit about yourself and your background? This is your first time on the program, so maybe you can tell us a little bit about where you're coming from and your association with the Center for Stateless Society.
Well, I had just gradually gotten into anarchism, starting probably roughly the same time I was first exposed to the web in the late 90s, around 2000. Just found out more and more about it, and specifically about individualist anarchism, the school of anarchism. They sometimes call the Boston anarchists around Benjamin Tucker and Liberty Magazine. I also, during the same timeline, was learning more about economics and finding out more and more things about how dependent the corporate economy is on state intervention for its survival. How laughable all the ideological rhetoric is about free market capitalism and free enterprise. And I did some fairly extensive reading and economic literature on economies of scale and how most corporations are many times larger than the peak scale for maximum efficiency. And they're only able to survive because the state is subsidizing their inefficiency costs and protecting them from competition. And as I was developing this line of thought, I wrote my first book, Studies in Mutualist Political Economy, and it was the next few years that I came into contact with Brad Spangler, Roderick Long, and the people at Center for a Stateless Society, and became their first paid commentator. Since then, I've written some more books and expanded my operations at C4SS.
Excellent. Well, let's talk about one specific article that's up there at c4ss.org, and which I came across recently, although it is not a recently written article. It's called Against Objective Journalism, and once again, I will link that in the show notes for this interview, so people can go and read it for themselves, and I hope they will. It's a very interesting article on a topic that I've been thinking about quite a bit recently, and that, in fact, I'm going to be talking about on my podcast this coming Friday. And I was intrigued by this article, which goes in some depth into talking about the underlying ideology behind this myth of objective journalism that the so-called mainstream media supposedly pervades when it is giving its he said, she said, or stenography type journalism. Why don't we talk a little bit about this? And before we start critiquing this at great length, perhaps we should just talk a little bit about this myth of objective journalism and what the mainstream media would like us to believe that they're doing when they report in this style.
Well, when the media says it's being objective, what it really means is that it's reporting only the things directly said by public figures. It does no independent fact-checking or investigation of its own, because it might turn out that one of the so-called two sides in a story is lying, or that the truth itself is biased and shows that one side is right and the other side is wrong. And that would be unethical suggesting that there isn't any objective truth beyond what one side or the other says is outside the scope of professional objective journalism as they understand it. The direct appeal to reality or to an independent realm of factual truth is something they won't put up with.
Now, of course, this is something that is absolutely heavily loaded from an ideological point of view, and you bring this up in your article talking about Walter Lippmann, a writer that I certainly hope my audience will be familiar with. And you talk about his spectator theory of knowledge, and you quote Christopher Lash, who is describing in his book The Revolt of the Elites, Lippmann's view of society, which is, quote, "substantive questions could be safely left to experts whose access to scientific knowledge immunized them against the emotional symbols and stereotypes that dominated public debate." So by that formulation, it would suggest that the aim of the so-called mainstream media to come with this objective journalism is to present the experts in the sort of the talking head realm, and to present that as if that is the closest that we can ever get to any sort of objective truth. And of course, that is conditioning the public in many ways to abrogate their responsibility to actually think about these issues for themselves, and simply to leave it to this reified class of so-called experts. Let's talk a little bit about that idea and the kind of conditioning that the public has been under for so long to accept that.
Okay. Well, the ideology of objective journalism is just one outgrowth of the larger progressive ideology at the turn of the 20th century, and progressivism, as it came to us from people like Herbert Crowley, Walter Lippmann, and so forth, is basically a managerial professional ideology. It was the ideology of the professional managers who ran the large corporations, government agencies, universities, charitable foundations, and so forth. And It had its ultimate origins in industrial engineering. They saw themselves as managing society as a whole in the same way that an industrial engineer manages production processes. And from that ideological standpoint, all that matters is objective expertise. Managerial expertise is something that's above politics. So the best way to achieve rationality is to put all decision making in the hands of professionals and experts, and take them out of the hands of ward healing politicians and the ignorant public, and minimize the sphere of politics. What they would consider the sphere of politics is what we would consider ordinary people's control over the decisions that affect our lives. So the less element there is of craft lore or self-management in industry, the more things are tailorized, the better. The more hierarchies are subject to Weberian standard operating procedures that take discretion out of the hands of individuals, the better. It's pretty much the direct opposite of the Hayekian idea of distributed knowledge.
Well, that's exactly right, and this is so important to understand, not only as an ideology as it applies to journalism, but as you say, more of a type of overarching aim for the statists and others who wish to control society at large. And this ties into so many of the things that we've talked about on my podcast before, including the education system and the roots of the modern education system in a similar mindset that was really trying to produce certain products, namely children who would be obedient and willing and able to respond to bells and compartmentalize their day and all of these types of things. And I note that you have written on this subject recently at the P2P Foundation blog, talking about in the corporate state education system, you're the product. Let's talk a little bit about what type of person that is ultimately produced from this type of mindset that the journalistic class tries to portray in their journalism.
Oh, the educational system is like any other mass production industry. It operates most efficiently when it creates a product that could, in standardized grades, that can be processed by the entire industry with a single set of standard operating procedures, and not having to tailor the process to an excessive number of variations. And the whole point is to produce a standardized and graded human being for corporate human resources departments. Any human being that falls outside of these tolerance specifications winds up in the permanent underclass or in the criminal justice system.
Well, then let's talk about what would contrast with this idea as it's been handed down to us for generations now, and which I'm sure we've all sort of been steeped in from the moment of our birth, which is one aspect of that, of course, is this idea of objective journalism and the way that we see that things are reported in the mainstream media. It's important to understand that this idea really is dating from really the early 20th century, and that if you go back, for example, as you point out in your article, to the 19th century, we have historical antecedents of the blatantly opinionated, blatantly partisan newspapers that were operating at that time that came from a definite point of view, and that its readers understood exactly that where it was coming from and what voice was behind it, which was quite a different way of doing things. Let's talk a little bit about some of those historical antecedents to the contrast to what the system that we're used to at this present time.
Yeah, well, in the 19th century model of journalism, the party press, and for that matter, the earlier 18th century pamphlets and broadsides, the idea was that you approach the truth not through pretend objectivity and pretending not to see an independent realm of facts. You approach the truth through cross-examination and dialectic. The proper solution to error was not pretending to be objective and just reporting what public spokespersons and HR departments say. It was to make the best case for the truth as you understood it, and then have other people relentlessly cross-examine you and attack your use of the facts and your logic and present a countercase, exactly what the same thing a cross-examining attorney does to a witness on the stand.
No.
The ideology of science did to nature, basically put it to the test through active examination.
Exactly right. More of a dialectical model for arriving at a truth rather than having some sort of objective realm that is supposedly being apprehended through this objective presentation. And I think that that's an important distinction for people to keep in mind. But let's talk about how that could work in a 21st century context, because obviously the technology for disseminating this information has vastly changed since that time. So I think the idea of returning to that historical antecedent would look somewhat different in our modern era. Perhaps you can talk about the way that blogging and this new idea for citizen-based journalism is transforming this old paradigm of the supposed objective journalism.
Well, I think blogs and online news sites and other aggregators have replaced the old-style newspapers, the most efficient way of aggregating news from different sources. Very little of the news I read is actually under the masthead of a single newspaper that some individual editor thought was the best stuff to put together in a single issue. Most of what I read is broken down into individual stories from different newspapers, different wire services, and so forth, that are put together by the editors of news aggregator sites of various sorts, whether they're blogs or sites like Alternet or whatever. And because the raw material is being used in a completely different way, it's accessible to anyone who wants to criticize it. All you have to do is put in a hyperlink to the story to Fisk it or take it apart piece by piece. You can make an active case by drawing on news stories from a large number of different sites and different newspapers, just throwing in the hyperlink to them. You're no longer limited to the framing of a newspaper editor. You're able to take the raw material generated by reporters themselves and aggregate it into your own picture.
That's right. I mean, everyone can potentially become their own editor, which is really a revolutionary idea. And I think that we finally have the information technology to actually make that happen. And as you say, to achieve some sort of distributed information paradigm whereby people don't have to rely on those centralized sources. How do you see a website like c4ss.org fitting into that paradigm?
Well, we do less in the way of news aggregation, although we do have a blog that does link to news items. It's primarily op-ed commentary and research papers. We're making a case for specific ideologies, specific political and social model, more than we're aggregating news as such. I guess the shortest summary would be it's a left-wing market anarchist site.
Well, that is, I guess, as good a label as any, but of course also stifling in a way as any label is. So I hope people will go to c4ss.org to check it out for themselves. But on that note, is there anything else you'd like to leave the listeners with on this subject of objective journalism today?
I guess just where it fits into the larger picture, we've been in technological trends for the last several decades that reduce the transaction costs of aggregating individual action through network communications rather than through hierarchies. We're also seeing the development of smaller and cheaper production technologies so that virtually everything we do in the mental and physical realm is being done on a distributed basis at the point of consumption and then aggregated through network or stigmergic organization rather than through hierarchies and bureaucracy. We're basically seeing technologies that make the old hierarchies obsolete. We no longer need the functions they used to perform.
All right. Well, it's a fascinating subject. And so again, I hope people will check out the article that we've been talking about today. Once again, that will be linked up in the show notes for today's episode. It's from c4ss.org. It's under the headline Against Objective Journalism. And it's a very interesting commentary on this whole paradigm and the idea. So Kevin Carson, I do appreciate your time today. Thank you again for coming on.
Well, thanks for having me.